We Talk Podcast is now proudly presented by Geek Nation Tours. Take a trip to NYCC in October that takes you to more than just the convention. Think of it as New York City through a comic geek's eyes, including a trip to Jay and Silent Bob's Secret Stash comic book store. Edmonton residents can visit Happy Harbor on Free Comic Book Day to enter a draw for this very trip. Featuring travel packages going all over the world and covering all the genres your inner geek would ever want to embrace, including tours designed around zombies, sci-fi, comic books, and anything else you could ever imagine. Geek Nation Tours is the number one site to embrace geek culture while seeing the coolest places in the world.
Hey, oh, and here we go. This is We Talk Comics live at the Calgary Comic and Entertainment Expo. We have quorum. We have more people in the audience than we have on stage, which is always my goal.
I think we'll still be okay.
I think somebody has the We Talk spirit in the audience.
If she walks out, we can still have the panel, but we can't vote on anything. I am the host, Keith. I'm one of the regular hosts of We Talk Comics. I have to be here for our second year and the 10th year of the Calgary Comic and Entertainment Expo. I believe I've been here all 10 years. Sometimes I just had panels without anyone. I didn't have a room. I just talked in the hallway.
The bathroom doesn't count.
To be fair, the turnout was about the same. All right, I'm joined by, to my left.
I'm Chris. I'm also a co-host on We Talk Comics. Every week we just sit down and talk about comics. We search out those creators, some of which are on this panel, and talk to them, pick their brains, but this is our chance to do it live and just talk about comics and celebrate comics.
My name's Stephanie Chan. I started in comics as a comic book colorist and colorist assistant. I've also done things like make Newsarama's blog and some stuff from comic resources as well. I've done so many different little things now, I can't even name them all.
I'm Ryan Ferrier. I'm a writer, local. Sometimes letterer. I do Dave for IDW, Curb Stomp for Boom, Sons of Anarchy for Boom, and a bunch of other creator-owned stuff.
I'm Robert.
Hi, your lawyer.
Yeah.
I'm Robert Vendetti. I write comics as well. I write X-Men Man of War for Valiant. I also write Green Lantern and Flash for DC, and I do creator-owned things as well.
I'm Brett Monroe. I'm a co-host, and I'm one of the reasons that this panel actually exists. And that, you know, sometimes I think maybe that was a bad choice. But no, I get to sit beside Robert Venditti. That means it's a good choice.
Did you ever think you'd be here? Honestly, I mean, did you ever think that day would happen?
No, I didn't.
It's amazing.
I know.
Is it everything you hoped it would be?
You're the meat in a fanboy sandwich right now.
That's disgusting.
That joke's going to kill on the audio podcast. Yeah.
Technically, so are you, Ryan.
So this is a real love fest. I'm on the edge of the dais here, and I feel like I'm on the Death Star. There's no railings on any of the stuff. It's about a 6 foot drop. If I move my chair too far, I'm just going to go right over.
I've got 1 foot off.
I am reasonably sure that insurance will not cover this either. Thankfully, we're in Canada. I'd be okay. All right, well, we're gonna do a little bit of news to start off. That's one of the things we often do on We Talk Comics. We hit a couple of the news topics. Our news is sponsored by a wonderful website called Comicosity, comicosity.com, which is a comics-only website. They don't do any of the movie stuff, none of the TV stuff. They only talk about comics, which I love doing. So I'm going to go right into a news story about a TV show.
That's the way we roll. It doesn't make any sense.
Clearly, I didn't get it from their website. So, Daredevil, Netflix, Daredevil. Some people have heard of it. Who has watched what? What's your favorite part? I have watched all 13 episodes.
Spoilers.
And all I'll say is the fight with Stiltman is awesome.
Man, Stiltman's in there?
Stiltman.
Oh, spoiler!
Stiltman is not in there.
Actually, he is.
You're spoiling. Hey, see, now Ryan's just gonna go rogue.
No, it's an Easter egg. That's not a spoiler. It's an Easter. It's like in the background for like 2 seconds.
But there is no Stilt Man. It's post-credits on the 13th episode, but you know. So, Chris, have you started into Daredevil yet?
I have not watched a single episode. For some reason, I just haven't had 13 hours to spare between the time this panel takes place, and I want to do it in one giant chunk.
Well, yeah, so, you're a quitter, Chris. I mean, it's 50 minutes an episode. That's only 11 hours.
Yeah, it's 11 hours.
Sorry, I need 11 hours. Haven't got 11 hours yet. I've been making lists for the bins here. That's all I've been doing for the last 3 days.
Stephanie, Daredevil?
Let's see. Before I started it, I said, I'm going to just do one a day, and I'm going to pace this out, right? So 4 episodes later, I think I made it to Sunday at that point. And it was like, okay, fine. I made it up to, like, I think about 6 episodes. And then, honest to goodness, the only thing that stopped me was when I found out that I'm going to be doing the Constantine panel. So I stopped watching Daredevil to rebone up on Constantine. So I've been binge-watching that instead. But honestly, like, Daredevil is surprisingly good. I was quite impressed with it. The fights are really good. That hallway scene.
Yeah.
That hallway scene, right? One take. Yeah, the one take hallway scene. That was something else.
I'm the spoiler police. I'm allowing the hallway scene as a comment. All right. Ryan, Daredevil.
Yeah, I'm on episode 11 or 12. So I'm not done, but I'm almost done. I'm a huge Daredevil fan, like huge. He's my favorite Marvel character, so I was really excited about it. And the first episode, I wasn't too jazzed about, but now I'm like super into it. The one thing that is weird is that I found it almost too violent.
It is surprising.
Yeah, it's so. Like, and I'm a dude that I love violence. Like,
you're pro violence.
Yeah, I'm
pretty pro violence. But it almost felt a little bit off because it's too violent. But I still like it. I think you know, Vincent D'Onofrio's really kicking it as Kingpin.
Oh yeah.
And yeah.
I did have that feeling probably 2 episodes in, and I thought, you know, all the folks that were like hand-wringing about Man of Steel being too dark or too violent, they're just going to pee themselves when they get like 3 or 4 episodes into Daredevil.
Yeah.
Like, they will not be able to handle this.
Yeah.
And Daredevil, too violent. Ryan Ferrier, writer of Curb Stomp. I can see it on the DVD box right now.
But I love violence was really the pull quote there.
Now I'm a guy who loves violence. But yeah, I also like the how they're really balancing the, you know, like the court stuff and the crime stuff, like with the Ben Urich, like, you know, the movie was kind of just all about the superheroics of it. I like that this is a bit more. It's almost like kind of like The Wire, sort of. Like I get that sense sometimes.
They're really like going like a crime angle.
Yeah.
So in noir sense, you're saying it has.
I think The Wire is a good comparison. It is like, you know, it's crime drama more than it is costume.
Yeah, you know, like they go in old Buicks and they drive in down by the docks and they talk to each other. And in that sense, it's a lot like The Wire.
Not as funny as The Wire.
Yeah.
So, Rob, I know you write Green Lantern, you write Flash. Are you allowed to watch Daredevil?
And do you like violence?
How are you?
It's too violent for me. Yeah. No, I'm allowed to, yes, but I have not seen it yet. So, just been busy with other things. I definitely have heard all the buzz, and apparently this hallway scene is going to be the best scene that's ever been shot in a hallway ever, I guess. All I can think of is The Room. I don't know if you guys know that movie, The Room. It's just, yeah. It's just called The Room, but for reasons that aren't entirely clear, other than that it's actually filmed inside rooms, I guess. When you said the hallway, that's the only thing I can think of. Like, I'll love it if
it's
he's
that
in
quality
scene, yeah.
With a velvet suit. And yeah.
Could you imagine Tommy Wiseau as Daredevil?
Oh.
He'd be like, I hate them. Oh, hi. It's bullshit.
See, this right here is the risk of spoilers, though, because for the first 2 hours that Rob watches Daredevil, he's going to, every time there's a scene in the hallway, wait, this could be the hallway scene.
You guys can see.
He's going to be all ramped up. Oh, this can't be the hallway.
You guys can spoil whatever you want.
We have a special guest in the house. Stan Lee said he wasn't going to be here, but Stan Lee is here.
Excelsior! What's going on? I say Stan Lee. invented comic books.
Don't you fucking touch me.
I'm gonna steal your energy.
I'm gonna dress up like Jack Kirby and tap dance on your grave. Kirby, Kirby.
For those listening at home, Stan Lee has crashed our panel. Or, you know, Steve Ditko has crashed our panel. That's what makes Steve happy. One guy got that joke.
I saw Steve today. He lived me. Anyone want any licorice?
Brett and or Stan Lee, have you seen Daredevil yet?
No, I haven't seen Daredevil. Stan Lee, have you seen Daredevil?
The Netflix?
Yes.
I'm scared of my computer.
Hey, shut up. This is the panel.
Why does Stan Lee sound like Sergio Argonne?
I'm old.
Well, thanks for coming, Stan.
Where am I?
Stan's got to head to a photo op where you are not allowed to touch nor talk to Stan. Do not approach Stan. Do not make direct eye contact with Stan. Do not turn your back when you exit the room from Stan.
Never turn your back on Stan.
All right, one person got that joke. Now I'm feeling good. And it was a different person.
We talk comics, entertaining one person at a time.
Quite literally, one person at a time.
I'm not a violent dude, but Stan Lee impersonators drive me crazy.
Is it a thing? Or Stan Lee impersonators?
Yeah, that dude's just
That's
riffing
first
on.
One I've
yeah,
ever
like
seen.
They did it at San Diego for like 3 years, and then they kicked him out.
That very same dude?
No. That's a cheap knockoff.
So this is an impersonator of the Stanley impersonator.
Yeah.
Oh.
You gotta go with that two-layered cosplay now. Like you can't just do a costume anymore. You gotta be like Princess Leia, like as a zombie. Like you got.
It's gotta be a mashup.
Right.
That wasn't even
Star
a good
Wars
cosplay.
Pokemon, I'm in.
That's right. You gotta do Jesse from Breaking Bad as a stormtrooper. Like it's every time. Like, that's a third person.
Well, in fairness, his Stan Lee looked a bit like a zombie.
A bit, yeah. Was close to Sergio Aragon.
So the Stanley Sergio mashup then.
Yeah, see.
Well, I'm glad that it wasn't my fault that this went off the rails, Mo. All right, a couple more news stories. Celebration is also on this weekend. Those who are not cool enough to come to the Calgary Comic and Entertainment Expo are at Star Wars Celebration. They just announced a Lando Calrissian comic by Charles Soule and Alex Maleev. If you could do a Star Wars comic, any Star Wars character, do a miniseries of them, what would it be, Stephanie?
Ooh, R2-D2. The entire comic will be in beep, boop, boop, beep.
Yeah, you'll probably think that's great up until 5 issues.
I'll be impressed if it goes till 5 issues. I had this idea that came to me today when I was watching the Star Wars, the new trailer that just came out. And because they show, am I spoiling the trailer? Can I spoil the trailer?
There are people who have not seen the trailer.
What, the new one?
Yeah.
Half the audience is going, there's no damn
all right.
Well, it's not a major spoiler, it's just a minor one.
You can't spoil a trailer. It's crazy.
Ryan's my spoiler constable.
Spoiler
said,
alert.
There is impossible to spoil a trailer.
Okay, right? Excellent. Well, they showed the Imperial ship crashed in the sand pile and everything, right, on the planet, right? And then they show the ships going in and out of it because they're doing like a battle in the wreckage sort of thing. And my first thought was, what if the Jawas were in there, like scavenging that thing like crazy? That would be awesome. Then I realized I actually just wanted a story about Jawas scavenging like Imperial spaceships that crash. And then my friend pointed out to me that, no, that's not Tatooine, so there's probably not Jawas. I'm like, what if there's immigrant Jawas? And then my friend's like, no, they're taking our jobs! And our droids!
Stephanie said Jawa. Do you need a minute?
So far, she's my favorite.
So that's what I do. I do a comic about immigrant Jawas.
Sweet. I would do, I don't know how to pronounce his name, but it's like Nien Nunn, like the co-pilot from, he was in the Millennium
Falcon. Return of the Jedi, yeah.
Yeah, Return of the Jedi. He was Lando's co-pilot in the Falcon.
He talks with the weird.
He goes, yeah. That's his old, that's all he says.
The
he says, yeah, and he laughs. He's got the lips. He's got lips that like go, like lips for days on that guy. But I would do something, I think there's something to it.
Oh, come on, that was just some lazy. That costume. That was.
I think there's something to it, man. It was very moist as well. But I would do that, or is it like a Gronk? What's the trash can? It's literally a trash can from McDonald's, like the plastic with feet.
I think it's just Gonk.
Gonk. Okay, Gonk. Yeah, I do a Gonk. Go ahead.
The most ripoff I ever felt as a child when I got that action figure. I think that's what we called him. I hated that.
The trash can droid. Yeah.
Yeah. That's...
Yeah, well, he was articulate. He had 2 points of articulation, like forward and then backwards. the feet were attached. Star Wars Expanded Universe is probably only 6 or 7 novels about Nien Nunn. Mm-hmm. So, you know, not much out there as far as Star Wars goes for developing his body.
Or Jack Porkins, that would be good, too. The dude, he literally squealed like a pig when he crashed.
The poor guy. He's just got a glandular problem. He's a bit heavy set.
He was
what
a good
do they
dude.
Call him? Porkins.
Yeah.
That's just not cool.
He was a good dude.
Pour out some blue milk for Porkins.
Tell us, Robert, who would you, what would you write?
I haven't seen Star Wars. No, I'm just kidding.
Ronald, when you see the scene in Star Wars with the hallway.
You guys just spoiled the hell out of Star Wars. I don't know. I guess Chewbacca, maybe. I love Chewbacca. The one character who was my favorite toy when I was little, and all you ever do is see him, I think. I don't think he ever does anything but his hammerhead. Like, I always want to know what that dude's story was.
Oh, yeah. That was a rare toy, too.
Was it? Really?
Yeah. It was one of those expensive ones. Mm.
Oh. So, I always wanted to know what his deal was.
Yeah. He actually has he's a story in one of the books. Sorry, I'm nerding out Star Wars now.
Like a novel? Or
yeah, there's like a Tales from Mos Eisley Cantina. Yeah.
Yeah. There is?
Yeah.
Okay, so where's he from?
I don't remember.
Oh, you don't remember?
I know his name.
It's up to you to read the book.
Momondon,
yeah.
I have the action figure, but cool. Also, tragically, he died on Jabba's sail barge. No one noticed. He was hanging out there. He was visiting a friend. Sail barge destroyed.
Yeah. Go to desert, they said. It'd be nice, they said.
Come out to the jungle and wave, smoke a few laughs.
Yeah.
All right, well, on a more serious note for the news, I'm going to hand this over to Brett for a minute.
Okay, well, we found out just a couple days ago that Herb Trimpe died, and that was a sad moment because, well, for me, I loved his G.I. Joe, and that was really one of the places that I noticed him more. But a lot of people came out in support of him. But one of the things that Rob Liefeld said was that, you know, we should take the time to thank the creators, especially the ones that influenced our childhood. And so I just wanted to say, like, ask everybody, who are some of the creators that they would thank, you know, that influenced their childhood? Robert, you're next to me.
Well, I didn't start reading comics, and it just seems crazy because I keep trying to deflect or whatever, but I didn't start reading comics until I was 27, so I didn't read them growing up. But in terms of, like, me getting into the business and wanting to be a writer and all that, I would say Kurt Busiek was probably the biggest influence on me because the first comic books I read when I was in my 20s were Astro City, and I just didn't know comics could be like that. I don't know what my conception of them really was at all, but he was the guy that I read those, and they were so grounded, and the characters were so strong, and it had this perfect blend of, you know, sort of superheroics, but sort of a ground level view looking up at it, as opposed to most comics, the superheroes looking down at the ground is your POV sort of thing. So, you know, he's probably was the biggest influence on me.
How about you, Ryan? Who would you think?
That's a tough one because there's so many. Like the 80s DC stuff, like Wolfman and Perez, that was big for me, like the Crisis stuff. That kind of got me into like superhero books. There's a lot of like weird British cartoonists whose names I don't know, but their work really inspired me a lot. And then like other than that, they're still living, so it feels weird to say, you know, but like Ellis, like Warren Ellis is huge for me, and early Grant Morrison, and even early Frank Miller, like the early Frank Miller Daredevil stuff was huge.
Stephanie.
Yeah, that's a hard one for me too. Growing up, yeah, Wolfman Perez's run of Teen Titans was phenomenal for me.
I forgot Teen Titans.
Oh, so good. It was so good, right? But then a little before that, I got a big pile of those DC Digests, and they had a big run of the Black Canaries by Alex Toth in those, and those I read over and over and over again. And I think that's why I own so many fishnet things.
Me too.
Yes. But looking back, like, I think the series that really stands out the most for me is Justice League International, the J.M. DeMatteis, Keith Giffen run, because they were hilarious, and it was like the characters I like kind of thing. It was just like, it was everything about comics I loved was like in there, and then Kevin Maguire's expressions on the faces were like, really, really, really great. And yeah, it's weird because even today, I still find I'm influenced by current artists, like on a regular basis sort of thing, even though I'm an adult now, but whatever.
How about Chris?
Yeah, sure. I have to say Doug Murray. He wrote The Nam, which was one of my favorite comics books growing up. Mark Hazard, Merc was a great one. Also, Mike Grell. Mike Grell was one of the best comic book artists. He wrote Andrew, all of Warlord. John Sable, Freelance was a wonderful book. And unfortunately, he's still alive, but he doesn't. I haven't seen any work from him for a long time, and I'd really love to see more of his stuff. I just love, and he could draw women like you would not believe. Just gorgeous book.
Unfortunately, you haven't seen work from him. Not unfortunately.
Yeah.
Yeah. No.
Unfortunately, that motherfucker still breathes.
I wanted to clear that up a little bit there.
He's just straight
on that one. I'm a big fan. Unfortunately, yeah. He's still alive.
If I find him, I'm going to kill him.
Looking at the log box with all the comments. Unfortunately, that dude's still alive.
That's how I organize my comics. It's not how I feel like the shelf of still alive. And
I could actually tell a story that's going to sound horrible when I tell the story, but
I love it.
I met Joe DiMaggio when I was younger. When I was a kid, one of my first jobs, I worked at a baseball card store, and the guy would run a lot of shows, kind of like this now. This is back in the heyday of baseball cards, and he would always have people come in, and the staff at the store would rotate. So like I worked at the store when he had the show where Willie Stargell came, but I worked at the show when he had Carly Stremsky, Brooks Robinson, Joe DiMaggio. You would just have different people come around. So I met Joe DiMaggio, and he autographed the ball for me. And on the day he passed away, my dad called me. He was not a nice man to meet in person. He actually punched me in the shoulder because he got mad at me because he thought I did something that I didn't do. And he just wasn't a nice guy for whatever reasons. I don't know. It was kind of sad, actually. But on the day he died, my dad called me and was like, ka-ching! And I was and I never sold the ball. I don't endorse that behavior, you know. But it was more my dad saw him punch me, and so there was just kind of like he was not liked by my dad.
Wow.
And it was a big thing because I come from an Italian family, and Joe DiMaggio was... All my family's from Providence, Rhode Island, but they were all Yankees fans because the Yankees had all the Italian players, you know. And like my grandpa, you know, used to pack a lunch and drive all the way to Fenway to see the games with his friends. And when we met Joe, found out he wasn't really that nice of a guy. Everybody was just kind of mad about it, you know. By contrast, like Willie Stargell, I worked at the store that day. And like I said, I didn't get to go to the show. He came by the store after the show, and I tried on his World Series ring, and he just sat there and talked to me for a while, you know, and just like signed whatever I wanted to sign and whatever. He's the coolest dude ever, you know.
Wow.
A lot of those guys were just Joe, you know. I don't know, whatever happened to him.
And then you punched Willie Stargell.
No, I did not punch Willie Stargell. But, I still have the ball, though. I didn't sell it. I didn't capitalize on the man's.
Jerry Ordway would be mine. I mean, John Byrne's still doing stuff. He was like my favorite when I was a kid, but Ordway doesn't do as much anymore. And a fantastic artist who his style's just not picked up as much anymore. So that's who I would remember, who I would like to thank. And you know, a lot of these guys are on social media or email addresses publicly. Mm-hmm. Send them. I've made a point of just contacting some of these people and just saying, like, thank you for your work. Like, I couldn't dream of this when I was, a kid, that these people would be that accessible. Brett, that was the end of my notes for this show.
Awesome, Tom. I'm glad.
No, actually, I have one more thing. So Marvel and DC are kind of focusing a lot on the Teen Plus audience right now. Doing most of the stuff for kind of focusing for teen and 20 something as a target audience. Certainly, we're seeing this in a lot of the new books that are coming from both. But right now, we don't seem to have DC doesn't have a Vertigo line of in continuity mature readers books. Marvel doesn't have, like, Marvel used to have the Marvel Knights line that was in continuity, but mature readers. Vertigo started as mostly in continuity. Company owned. Do the big two have a place for that, or really has Image and the independents taken that over?
And you're asking if the big two has a place for in continuity, more mature reader stuff?
Yeah.
I mean, I would say yeah. I'm not having seen Daredevil, the way you're describing it, it almost sounds like it's that kind of story, and it's obviously really popular. So I think there's definitely a place for it, but it doesn't have to be an either or situation. I've done creator owned stuff, and obviously I do work for higher stuff as well, and I think that there can almost sometimes the discussion can sort of degrade into factions almost, like do one or do the other, but you shouldn't do both, or one is better than the other. And for me as a writer, I think that and you've got your foot in both pools as well, but for me as a writer, I think that there are different kinds of creativity. Like, if I do something creator-owned, I can do whatever I want. It's a blank canvas, and that's one kind of creativity. But it's another kind of creativity to have to write stories based on a shared universe and almost kind of have constraints put on you. There's a whole school of literature that says constraints breed creativity, So, I don't think that it has to be an either-or thing. I think there's definitely space for that kind of stuff.
Yeah, I agree. I'd actually argue that, from what I've seen, the incontinuity big main stuff, not to call someone out, but Marvel, that is for mature people. Like, what 12-year-old can really get into, Hickman's Avengers run? And I love Hickman's Avengers run. I'm not talking garbage about it at all. It's fantastic. But it's so, calculated and it's heavy. When I was a kid, I don't think I'd have an easy time following that. Because when I was a kid and I picked up a Spider-Man book, it was like, oh, Punisher's trying to kill Spider-Man. Or Electro's trying to, it's a two-part Electro fight Spider-Man kind of thing. So I think, if anything, there should be more kind of all ages or at least accessible books. I think DC has a lot of that. Because my nephew, he reads Green Lantern stuff, and he's like four. But even with the Marvel stuff, it looks like they're kind of steering it a bit more. With the Secret War stuff, it looks fun. And yeah, I think more comics should be made for kids. Am I way off? Am I crazy?
Yes, I've read Curb Stomp.
I don't know.
I think that you should, just like when you go to a bookstore and there's books there for everybody, there should be comics for
everybody. I think there needs to be more variety from the big two, to be honest. Like, they go through these phases where there's a ton of diverse titles. Like, the first comic I actually worked on was Marvel Knights, the very first issue of the Marvel Knights comic. That was the first thing I ever worked on. And it was a blast, to be honest. You're working on this thing. It's a little bit more mature or whatever, but it's all these characters that you still love as a kid kind of thing. And so that left a really good impression on me. But I find with a lot of the mainstream titles, they get into these loops where it's all the same kind of thing. Like all of these titles are kind of I don't know if they need more diverse factions or something like that. Because it was nice with the Marvel Knights line was coexisting with the Marvel Universe kind of thing. But you knew those were the slightly more mature. But I do agree that there needs to be more comics that appeal to younger kids too. Because I know a couple of girls, they love the Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles, but the comics don't quite appeal to them, for example. They're not really made for 11-year-old girls. That's probably what we need, just more variety. And that's where the creator-owned stuff kind of comes in better, because now people are telling the stories they want to see or they want to tell, that kind of thing.
Yeah, that is one of the challenges, is that, you know, four-year-old, did you say, Ryan?
Yeah, like four through six. Like, I just gave away, like, all my floppies, like, all my single issues to my niece and nephew, and they're four and six, and, like, they read comics. They love comics because that's the only thing I buy for them. But, like, they read, like, My Little Pony and SpongeBob and that kind of stuff, but, like, they should be able to read like Marvel DC stuff. So, and but I gave this huge big box to my brother of all my comics, and I'm just like, yeah, dude, like, even though it says like Spider-Man, like, you can't hold it in your basement for 10 years and then give it to him, you know? That's kind of weird. I remember my mom was just giving me comics when I was like, before I could start reading. And
Yeah, I don't know. I read Kraven's last comic when I was like 11 or something.
That's a good point.
I was 9 and I read V for Vendetta.
Yeah, one of my first comics was Ralph Snart. Do you remember Ralph Snart?
Oh.
Just like nasty stuff. And my mom was like, oh, it's got a little lizard on the front. Let's give it to Ryan.
Follow him on Twitter, Ralph Snart. It's hilarious.
Nice.
Robert was only 28 when he read Watchmen.
Yeah, you know, like, it's funny. That's actually, I think I was older. But the way that I even got to that kind of stuff is so I read Astro City, and at that point there was only like 22 issues or something. And I don't know, I think Kerb was having some, I don't know, Astro City went away for a while, right? So that was the end of it, but I needed something else to do, and so I would go into the comic book shop, and it was like Superman number 7042 and Spider-Man, you know, the same way. I didn't know what to do, and so just by chance at that one point in time was when America's Best Comics had started up at Wildstorm. Hmm. And so here was a line of books that all had number ones on them. And so I started reading them, and I was like, purely based on the fact that it was a number one, and it was like more than one book, and it was going to be kind of its own little thing. And I'm reading Tom Strong, and, you know, I'm reading Prometheus. I'm like, this Alan Moore guy's pretty good. Like, what else has this dude written, you know? Oh, he wrote something called Watchmen? I'll go read that, you know? Like, that's literally how I got into all that stuff and found a lot of that. So, which is great. I mean, I obviously have a lot of catching up to do, but it's kind of cool to know that there's so much great stuff out there. You know, like, I just read Hard Traveling Heroes a couple months ago, you know, and or I read the Ostrander Mandrake, the first two trades of the Spectre run that they did, and I can't even imagine what it would have been like to read that in the 90s. Like, even reading it now, I couldn't believe how bold they were with some of the things they were doing. Like, you couldn't do that stuff now, and so it's great to be able to discover a lot of that, you know.
It's amazing going back through, like, being able to access them that way, because you know, there's a truism that 90% of everything is crap. So you get to have like the best 10% of all comics recommended to you. You don't have to trudge through the 90% of the 1990s that we did.
Trudge through. It was a pleasure.
Yeah.
But it makes all of the good stuff that much better by trudging through the crap.
I'm not convinced that's true. I do not believe you have to drink a $10 bottle of wine to enjoy a $100 one. That is your option.
Now, since we started doing this podcast, my favorite thing is when we're talking to people is to ask or getting recommendations, what should I be reading? I'd like to know what excites our panel, what's coming out today, what is the best comic that I could pick up off the shelves this week, this week's been. Oh, we got somebody in the audience. Is that a question, or were you wanting to answer the question?
Miss Marvel.
Miss Marvel.
Yes. By G. Willow Wilson. Just pick that up and start reading it. It's fantastic.
Is it better than Bitch Planet?
I have not.
Yeah, essentially the same book.
I've not had a chance to read that. But Miss Marvel is by far one of the current superhero comics that has captured the sheer spirit of, well, what Steve Ditko did with Spider-Man. It has captured that spirit with Kamala Khan as the new Miss Marvel.
I have read the first issue, and I didn't pick it. I liked it, but I didn't continue. But on that recommendation alone, I'm going to find it at a table this weekend, I promise you. Anyone else, panel or otherwise?
God Hates Astronauts.
Yes.
That's
a crazy
It's thing. The funniest book I've ever read.
Really?
I have no idea what's happening in it, man.
Yeah.
And I've read it
several Neither do
times.
I.
What's the point? You don't need to. I don't care what's happening in it. I think it's funny.
It's it's criminally underrated, I think. And especially from like Ryan Brown's a dude that does like the writing and the artwork every month.
And lettering.
And it's consistently like hilarious. It's good.
I'm Dave and Crimson. Chip Zdarsky and that faction.
Sex Criminals, good book.
Yeah, Sex Criminals. Do you see the book that came out, the little...
No.
Oh, that's funny.
What did, well, just tell it what it is.
Well, I can't remember what it's called because I didn't buy it. I saw it in... Sorry?
Just the Tip.
Just the Tip, thank you. How do you... Oh, dear.
I don't get it.
Yeah. I don't want to spoil it.
Well,
how would you...
Just everybody Google Grimpig. You have to be 18 and over, but just go ahead and look that up.
Yeah, apparently it turns.
Don't Google brimming, and if you do, that's not me. It just looks very similar.
Don't Google. I turn safe search off.
Yeah. And
then you can Google.
But yeah, I just Chip Zdarsky. I've always liked him for I don't know how long. He's been, like everything from him doing the one man convention across the street from the Toronto. Fan Expo, do you know about that?
Yeah.
Yeah, he basically is like one of the, you know, one of the biggest conventions in North America here, and then Chip Zdarsky's like, I'm not gonna set up in there, and he puts a little table on the street, across the street, and he just sets up his table and he puts some comics out, and he had like his one-man convention.
A recliner and two flip banners. And
right.
Like little racks of his comics, and he would just sit there and wait for people to come and buy comics.
I tabled next to Chip in Seattle like a month ago, and he came on the first day he came there. He wore dressed to the nines, fresh haircut, manicure, smelled great, nice button-down pressed Oxford shirt, a tie, little tie clip, leather shoes, just shine, looked perfect. Sweatpants pulled way up so you could see everything. And then he sat with like both legs up the whole weekend, and my table was blocked.
I'm now at the point where I just like I love the craziest thing you could put in a comic. Like, I do love God Hates Astronauts, but like I mean, Future's End was that for me. Like the first issue is like, you know, robot Superman fights Batman Beyond, and everybody's dead or smooshed into a giant robot. Like, all right, I'm in every week. Like, every Wednesday, this is me. It's the craziest thing I've ever seen.
What do you like, Rob?
I would say. Between all the stuff that Vine puts out and all the stuff that DC puts out, I probably that alone is probably like 60 issues of comics I read a month. So, but I would say the one thing that I've read that really stuck with me recently is Valiant has a miniseries going right now called Divinity, and I read the first issue. Matt Kent wrote it, and Trevor Hairsine is drawing it, and I actually read it when I was at the writer's retreat for Valiant. We were like on our lunch break, and I've known Matt for 10 years. I started out originally working in a warehouse, packing boxes at Top Shelf, and that's where Matt and Jeff Lemire and Craig Thompson, a bunch of other people were all there at that time. And so I've known Matt way back from doing that. But I read it, and I closed it, and the editor-in-chief of Valiant, Warren Simons, was sitting at the end of the table, and I just closed it, and I locked eyes with him, and I just shook my head, like, I'm just going to go be a farmer now. You know? I don't even know what just happened there, but I could never, ever do that. And I find that those are the, I don't know if it's the same for you, but it's kind of like your friends, like the people you're really, really good friends with. There's something about them that you admire about them that you don't have in yourself, you know. And I've got the same friends I've had ever since elementary school, and I can tell you what those are about each of those guys. But the same way with books, you know, when I come across a book, the ones that I really, really like are ones that I know are just... there's something about them that my process doesn't even operate in a way that would allow me to achieve that, you know?
Yeah.
Another example would be Jim Mahfood. He did this story called Carl the Cat that makes peanut butter sandwiches. Have you ever read this?
Yes. Oh, I read that in Seattle. Oh my God, that's amazing.
And it's about a cat who makes the best peanut butter sandwiches in town. And the mob is always trying to muscle him out of his peanut butter sandwich territory. And so like, he'll go make a peanut butter sandwich delivery. And like these mob dudes will jump out and he'll like pull out his katana and just eviscerate everybody, you know? And then as if that's not crazy enough, he also has a nymphomaniac alien girlfriend who's like always rolling around in the bed in the apartment asking him to come to bed. And he's like, damn, baby, I gotta make all these peanut butter sandwiches. Like, I don't even know, you know what I mean? It's like, it's my great. Mind does not operate in a way where I could conceive that. Like, I'm way too organized. Like, I'd be like, but why does the cat make peanut butter sandwich?
Yeah.
Like, how does he hold the katana without a gun? You know, like, that's just the way I'm wired, you know?
Yeah.
And so when I read something like that, I have so much affinity for it because I just, I could never do it, you know?
That book is crazy. I'm having flashbacks of reading it now. I remember how I was like, this cat's making a sandwich, and then you flip it over, and like two chicks are 69ing, and I was just like,
it's nuts.
What is going on? Can I say 69?
But it works. It all works. It all, somehow. It's like Aphrodisiac, which is a Jim Rugg book. Like, you know, it's just
yeah.
all this crazy stuff that happens, but somehow it all comes together when it could just be a mess, you know?
Yeah. Same with, Task Force Rad Squad by Caleb Golner and Buster Moody. That's very similar to that book. It's like, it's crazy. This one scene where like the car gets like some mutation liquid on it, and it turns into like the car from Roger Rabbit, where it grows like eyes out the headlights, and then it's like, I'm alive, and then it drives into a lamp and like dies. And it's just like, I'm like, what is your secret? I want to write stuff like that, you know?
I just read Ray Fox Intersect, the first few issues, and there's a great tag at the end of the in the back pages of the fifth issue that says that a lot of you are worried that this isn't making any sense, and a lot of you would be unhappy if it started to. I'm paraphrasing, but it's a fantastic book, and it's just like
Ray's a genius. Yeah, he actually has a book at Top Shelf from way back in the day that. He was there the same time that Matt and Jeff and all those guys were there, but his book has just not come out yet because it took such a long time to have the art get produced. But I think it's finally done. It's going to be out soon. But it's a really cool story. It's called Junction True. And he's been working on that for a long time.
All right, we have time for a few questions. Anyone got any questions for the panel? Or for me? You know, yeah, questions for me.
It's all about you.
Dance, monkey, dance.
I can't dance. I'll fall actually, off the dance stage. Yeah.
If he starts dancing up here, I think we'll all fall off the stage.
Come on, anyone. Truth or dare. Let's do it.
Yes.
Do you feel that the recent explosion of movies and the Daredevil Netflix and all these TV series coming out has rejuvenated comics in some way?
I think that it certainly can, but it doesn't always have to be the case. Just from my own personal experience, I wrote a book called The Surrogates, which was made into a movie, and I can promise you it didn't really have that much of a measurable impact on the comic book. But then on the other side, like with the Flash TV show, I'm writing The Flash right now, and you can definitely feel the sort of energy around it and the greater awareness of it. So I don't think it's an automatic type of deal, but I think it certainly can bolster the comic book industry.
Yeah, it seems to be challenging especially if the book isn't the same tone or feel as the show. Like, I mean, Marvel actually declined to put Big Hero 6 back into print because the comics were so incredibly different from what ended up in the film. They thought it was going to be a disservice to actually put it back into print. It would confuse people.
But I mean, I bought The Surrogates at an HMV, which is a big record store up here. And if there wasn't a movie, I don't think I would have been able to buy it there. So I don't know what their deal was, but it has to up the profile a little bit.
Yeah, I mean, it definitely helps to some extent, but I don't think it has to be like a...
I think the bigger
like a huge lasting impact.
Yeah, I think the bigger boost is in the fandom. Because there's not necessarily people buying the comics. There's more people into the comic universe, right? Whether it's the T-shirts or cosplay or I don't know, going to HMV, buying the scarves and things like that, right? Like, there's so many people who are into things about the material, but they may not necessarily buy the source material. And I think that's the way it's going right now.
Yeah, like, it's really cool to be a geek and a nerd right now. Like, super cool. That is so the opposite of what it was like when I was in school. Like, I was bullied for reading comics and, like, you know, and then playing Magic and Dungeons and Dragons and that nerdy shit like that. But, like, it's super cool to be geeky now and nerdy and that stuff. So it's a much different atmosphere. And I don't know if that's... I don't know why, if that's because there's more mass media movies and stuff like that. But, yeah, it's a lot different.
What do you see like going the other direction, Ryan? Because when you write Sons of Anarchy, and I'm glad I got that right. And last year, Bristol was on the panel, and I didn't get it right. And when people come up to you at a show, you've done a couple of shows since you started writing Sons of Anarchy. Is it comic fans who are now getting up who are also fans of the show, or are you getting people that were just fans of the show?
With Sons of Anarchy, I don't. This doesn't apply to like other licensed work, but with Sons of Anarchy, it's very niche. Like no one really starts reading Sons of Anarchy. Like even you know, it's like gonna be like, oh, a new arc with 19. I'll start that. Like its numbers are very solid, and it's very much fans of the show, and because the book is in such it's in continuity, it's canon with the show. So I just started the new arc and I didn't keep that in mind when I started working on it. Like I wanted it to be anyone can just kind of pick it up and read it, you know. So it's kind of weird.
That's an interesting. Robert was talking about creativity can be driven by those kinds of building a bit of a frame around it. But you've got to stay in continuity with a series that has already had a definitive ending.
Right.
How much freedom does that give you?
When I first pitched on it, I was like, well, what are the rules? Like, what can't I do? And they were just like, you can do whatever you want. Like, as long as it's not before the show or after the show, like, and you mean I can't kill a major character or do something that contradicts, you know, past or future actions, but I like the story arcs that I'm doing. Like I just came up with them. Like it was really weird how open it was.
You can't have like Ron Perlman punch time and it brings a couple of characters back to life for you.
and then he gets the anti-monitor suit, and then he grows Hellboy horns.
And then Superman flies around the Earth and fixes it all.
Yeah,
more half sack.
And then him and Jax. Fuck.
That's when the zombies show up.
You can do it
in the hallway.
Yeah, in the hallway.
That's the best hallway scene ever.
Jeez. Any other questions for the audience? We've got a couple more minutes.
That's okay, random.
Sure.
Have you ever played Super Fight?
I have not.
No, I have not.
It's like a card game like Earth Against Humanity, but with like Superman. So you have cards of Superman. Then you have another card that's been stung by a shrink ray. And then another card that's covered in spikes. Now you fight another person with those cards.
I've pitched for DC now.
Hey, what's the general consensus on Final, not Final Crisis, what was the one where Superboy punched through the time?
Was that Infinite Crisis?
Infinite Crisis. Yeah. I was good. I loved Infinite Crisis. Am I, guys, girls?
See, I've the relationship with DC for a long time that Robert has with all comics. I quit superhero comics for 15 years. I didn't read them at all for 15 years. But that meant that when I went back, I really got to read just like the high points, and I kind of hit the events. That also means I've read Infinite Crisis and Final Crisis back to back, and I can never remember which one's which. Because I mean, there was like 2 years between them when they came out of comics, but I read them like a day apart. I think most people hate all of the crises, but I mean, I love them.
I love them.
Again, the craziest things. Like, I love the craziest things. What was that about?
I've read Crisis on Infinite Earths, and I read Final Crisis, but I haven't read Infinite Crisis. And I like Final Crisis a lot.
Final Crisis, you know, like, great.
I mean, the scene where Superman, to be continued on his tombstone or whatever, I mean, it's just great. So. Yeah.
I think by the time Infinite Crisis came out, I was kind of jaded with DC at the time, because I didn't read it. Or whatever, and then someone went and told me, "Oh yeah, Superboy punches through time." I'm like, what?
That's so good.
That's not the best pitch for it. That's probably the worst pitch you can make.
It just sounds like
Superboy punching time. That's that.
Superboy Prime, right?
Just because Identity Crisis isn't getting enough love, I'll say I like that one.
Which one?
Identity Crisis.
Oh, that one.
I've read that one too.
I liked it, and then yeah.
And then the Twitter backlash happened?
Yes. Well, it was
Twitter at the time. Identity Crisis was certainly a tipping point for DC, a real tonal shift.
Yeah.
And that really, I mean, that spread for quite a few years from Identity to really all the other crises. There was this tonal shift that shifted it, you know, a few years older than it had been for quite a long time, as far as the target audience went. Certainly Identity Crisis is very much aimed at a, you know, mature audience.
Yeah. Identity hit those like emotional beats really well, like the whole Tim Drake stuff, you know, and what's the Sue Dibney's funeral where he goes to give a eulogy for his wife? And then he starts crying, plastic elongated man. And then, yeah, he his jaw drops, and then he actually like holds his melting jaw, and it was just like, ugh. I remember reading that in bed, and I was crying.
All right, we do have to wrap this up. We've gone a couple minutes over time, and I wasn't paying attention.
Okay.
All right.
That's my panel next.
So Stephanie is hosting Women Into Comics.
Right.
Is it in this room?
Yes.
All right. So you if you want to stay for Women Into Comics, I am hosting one in Palomino E, right around the corner. Paint and Canvas versus Tablet and Stylus, which is digital versus traditional art. We have several other panels over the weekend. Saturday, 12:30, Whose Script Is It Anyway? Is put on by the WeTalk folk. 3:30 on Saturday, Get Published or Die Trying, which is moderated by Brett, featuring a lot of folks from Renegade Press. Saturday, 6 p.m., Calgary Comic Creators, What's New, What's Next, focusing on local folk and a lot of books you can buy here at the show in Artist Alley. And then Sunday, 12:30, the Comic Book Fantasy Draft, which is a fantasy football applied to superheroes. And that's as much as Mo's been able to explain to me of what that panel is.
But it's done in snake format.
And it's awesome. And that one is done in snake format.
Oh, God.
I'm going to sign off. My next appearance outside of the con will be, I will be playing A Doctor in Morning Glories number 45, which is on shelves next week. That's the weirdest thing I got happening in comics this year. Chris, say goodbye.
Goodbye. I'm Chris_WeTalk on Twitter. And do check out everything we do at WeTalkPodcast.com. It is one of my favorite websites. Not only because that's where you find me.
These are my top five favorites. Stephanie.
Oh, let's see. Well, I have a panel almost every day at this convention here. So you can come see me on right after here for Women Into Comics. Friday, I'm actually holding something called the Geek Girl Gathering. It's a networking event for female positive comic creators to get to know each other, or just fans in general. And then Saturday, I'm hosting the Constantine panel. At 4 p.m. That's something that surprises me. And then 6:30 Saturday, I'm doing the Women in Video Games panel. And then Sunday, I'm doing social media and networking for creative types, where I'm gonna try to help you get online and get networking going.
I'm doing a bunch of panels. None of which I know when and where.
Are you selling stuff here at the show?
I am. I'm booth in it.
I'm going to give you some money.
I'm boothing at E6.
Get Dave. It's awesome.
Thank you. And I'm on Twitter, Ryan Ryder, one word.
Rob, plug some stuff.
I'm just doing the ongoing series, XO, Green Lantern, Flash. They all come out usually different weeks, so depending on what week you're at the store, there'll be something different there.
And you're going for poutine tonight.
I am going to go for poutine tonight, yes. And also I have a new event series coming out from Valiant this summer called Book of Death that starts in July.
Oh, yeah.
And I have my first novel coming out in June. It's a kid's novel for intermediate readers. It'll be out from Simon Schuster in mid-June. It's called Miles Taylor and the Golden Cape. That's about it.
Awesome. Well, Keith already told you about my panels. So I just want to tell you to, I just want to thank all these guys and tell you to go and buy all their work. And thank you for coming. We really appreciate it.